Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
April 15th, 2019. I'm Nima Naderi alongside John Horn, and we're here this week to preview the Monte Carlo Masters from Monaco. Let's introduce our co-host for this week. John, how are you, my friend?
Doing well, man. Glad to be home. Looking forward to another good week of tennis coming up with Monte Carlo. Should be good.
I think so. I mean, this is pretty much the official start of the clay court season, where we start to really gauge what's happening. You know, women haven't really taken off yet. They had a small event in Charleston a couple weeks ago after Miami. But I mean, the men are in full force this week, and then they got a couple smaller events, and then they got, Madrid, Rome, and then the French. Women will have Stuttgart as well as Madrid and Rome. So, John,
Don't forget Barcelona.
Barcelona's a big one.
Yes. We love the people of Spain. We've got to get them in there.
Yeah, I hear you. So, anyway, so let's, before we get into the draw preview for Monaco, want to, let's rewind a little bit. We haven't spoken to everybody for a couple weeks. Want to get your take, because I know you were down in Miami doing some coverage there. What was your thoughts overall on the venue? And then, you know, with Federer winning and all of that stuff. So, what's your overall, like, assessment of everything there?
Yeah, I mean, you know what, I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very well run. I mean, they've always done a very good job in Miami when it was a Key Biscayne, the first tournament, moving it to the Hard Rock Stadium where the Miami Dolphins play. I mean, it was impressive enough that they were able to accommodate a tennis event at the stadium. It looked a little bit strange inside, but once you got in there and got situated, the court was playing well. I thought that the fan experience was good. I thought that the center court was nicely designed, and the viewpoints were good for most of the spectators. I thought it lacked a little bit of ambience, to be honest. I think it needed a little bit of ambience, but I think that just comes from, you know, a lot of people, you know, getting used to the new venue. Some people were not happy that it moved from Key Biscayne, but we really couldn't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. But I thought the grounds, they did a great job of the grounds with all the practice courts, were all nicely situated. The out exterior courts were all easily accessible. There was some talk that some of the outside courts didn't have enough seating on, which I understood. It was a couple of days where I looked around and they could have maybe had a little bit more seating, but considering it was the first year, you know, putting it in a new location, I thought the fan experience was really good, as I mentioned. The food areas were great, a lot of drinking spots. People seemed to be really enjoying themselves. So I thought for a first year, it went very well, and the players seemed to like it. Federer, after he won, seemed to say that he was very, very, pleasantly happy with everything that was going on, and Isner seemed to like it. So I thought overall the work that the IMG people did, the tournament hosts, everybody, volunteers, everybody who was involved in putting the tournament together, I thought they did a nice job for the first year, and I think it'll only just grow and get better and better. And certainly it was a lot easier for the fans to get to, way more parking, a lot less traffic, and I think eventually people will grow to enjoy the tournament at this location.
Okay, very good. And so we had obviously Federer winning once again. I mean, this guy just keeps going, you know what I mean, taking advantage of his opportunities and draws open up. Nadal wasn't there. Djokovic loses early, and then he bags another one. And, you know, so I want to get your thoughts overall on that. And then we got to also talk about how he's decided to play the clay court season this year. I personally don't think it's a great idea. But, I mean, I think you should just copy and paste what he's done the last couple of years. But
I like that term, copy and paste it. Yes, that's not a bad idea. I thought Federer played well throughout the tournament, had a little bit of a blip early on in the first round, but after that, was pretty much on cruise control.
Yes.
Did get a little bit lucky with Isner being hurt in the final. I don't know if Isner would have beaten him anyway, but definitely that helped Isner was hurt. And, you know, the they ended up with a stress fracture in his foot, so
yes.
He was legitimately hurt too. So, yeah, I mean, I thought Federer is you know, he's had a good year again. You know, he goes and wins his 100th tournament in Dubai, plays well at Indian Wells, and gets all the way to the end there, and then he gets to Miami and he wins that tournament. So, I mean, you just keep looking at the AI, just keep thinking to myself, like, this guy is 37. I mean, he's in his 30s. I mean, we've seen what Tiger Woods did at the Masters. It seems to be that if you're in your 30s and 40s, it's no big deal anymore in any sport. It's the quality, the athleticism of these players in their sports. And I'd say, you know, Tiger and Federer, just how they're able to do it at such a high level, even after coming off of surgeries and things. Federer has been relatively healthy throughout his career, but I think he's been playing good tennis, and there's no reason to think that it's going to stop. Do I think that he should be playing the clay? I mean, you're probably right. The success in the past really is that he hasn't been. He skipped the clay. But at the same time, I mean, this is a guy who grew up on clay. I mean, he likes the clay. People kind of forget that he grew up on clay. That was his big surface, and he's won tournaments on clay before. He's won the French Open before. Granted, that was the year that Nadal lost early on. But you know, I think, you know, he's at the point of his career where maybe he'd be looking back and saying to himself, you know, I should have played on the clay some more. I didn't. You know, really, if you look at it from a perspective of Federer. For his body and everything, yeah, probably he shouldn't be playing the clay. But at the same time, what does Federer have to really win anymore? I mean, he's won everything. He's won 20 slams. He's won, you know, he's won everything. So why not let him just play? He's admitted that the ranking doesn't mean so much to him. I know he likes being number one. He likes being high up in the rankings. He's number one in the race to the end of the year final too right now. But I just sort of think, you know, there's no doubt that his career is going to come to a close within the next 2 or 3 years, I would suspect. And why not play on the clay if he wants to? He hasn't played it for a few years, wants to get back out there. Let the guy go back out there and let's see what he can do. And if he doesn't play well on the clay, then so be it. If he gets hurt, then people will look back on it and go, well, he shouldn't have played on the clay. But I think, you know, Roger Federer's been given the opportunity to actually play on clay, and he's the best tennis player of all time. Let the guy do what he wants, and let's see what happens. And maybe it'll be beneficial for him going into Wimbledon. Maybe it won't, you know. We'll see what happens.
So here's where I would disagree with what you're saying and combat that with the remark that, okay, so he's doesn't have anything to prove. Okay, that's granted. Yeah. But he still, you have to think, he wants to go down as the greatest player ever when he's done. He's been playing for over 20 years. Okay, but Djokovic is at 15 majors, right? And even though he hasn't played that well in the smaller events, albeit their Miami Indian Wells of the world, let's see how he does on the clay this week, he's still at 15, and he's won the last three. And he's only 31, still turning 32 soon. So the thing is that when you look at all of that, for me, if I'm Federer, I take off the clay again, get really well rested for Wimbledon and see what I can do there. I don't think he's going to win the U.S. Open. I think that's too tough at this point. But definitely he's got a chance at Wimbledon still. But if he plays the clay, he does, like, he's, I think he's going, what is it? I don't think he's playing Rome, right? I think he's just going to do Madrid and French. And if that's
the schedule at this point, yeah.
Yeah. So if that's the case, I mean, Madrid's always been kind to him because of the altitude. He likes that court. And then obviously the French is going to be tough. I would be shocked if he gets past the fourth round at this stage. But anyways, that still matches. Then he's going to play, what, Stuttgart, Halle, and then Wimbledon. And then probably play one of the two in the summer. Probably, I don't know if he's going to take off Montreal or whatever he's going to do. We'll see. And then he's going to get ready for Cincy, which he likes, and then U.S., and then take some time off, and then fall. I don't know. I mean, I definitely agree with you. I don't think he cares about the ranking unless he can get to one. That's a little bit tough at this stage. But if he can pat that Grand Slam record and get to 21-22, then he looks to be okay. Because even Rafa, right? I mean, he's probably going to win the French. Looks like it anyways. Then what is he going to be at, 18? Right? So he's only two away, right? So these type of things are very important, I think, when you're looking at it. Because these guys are very competitive. And they're playing for these, you know, for these accolades. And if they can't get those at the end of the day, that's going to be a little bit of a buzzkill, I think.
Well, I think there's definitely some merit to what you're saying. I think the one thing that people will say to Federer, as much as he's got the 20 slams, he's done everything in the sport, greatest player of all time, arguably, to me he is, But some people will say, well, he hasn't really proven that he's the greatest player of all time because he doesn't win a lot on clay. Nadal is dominated, and ultimately that's his rival. Nadal is the one who's dominated on clay. Federer hasn't. Maybe there's part of Federer. I mean, I'm not speaking for him. I don't know. I've never heard him say anything about this, but I know the Grand Slams are important to him. He obviously wants to win more, and the more slams that he wins, the more he cements his legacy, and it makes it harder for Djokovic or Nadal or anybody else to catch up to him one day. But at the same time, I kind of feel like in some ways that Federer kind of wants to show that he isn't just a hardcore grass court player, that he can play on the clay, that he can win on clay. And I'm not saying that he's going to go into Madrid and win Madrid. I'm not saying he's going to go to the French Open and win, you know, the French Open. I mean, I probably would side with what you're saying about, you know, he could go up the fourth round of the French easily. Like, there's no question. But I think there's part of Federer in some ways that wants to prove to people that he can play on the clay, and that, you know, don't forget, just because I've been out for 3 years on the clay, that means I'm trying to duck the clay. I kind of feel like it's a redemption thing for him. And I also would like to actually see, and I haven't got the numbers in front of me, but I'd actually like to see what Federer's record is against Nadal on clay. Like, are the numbers completely one-sided? Have they played some matches close? Has Federer won some matches? I don't have that in front of me, but I'd like to see Federer play Nadal on clay. Let's see, you know, how far apart they are, how close they are. Are they that far apart? And maybe there's part of Federer that wants to see that too, and sort of, you know, he's had Nadal's number on the hard courts of late, so maybe he wants to see where he stacks up against Nadal on clay. I'm certainly interested to see how Federer plays on the clay, since it's been a while since he has done. Again, I'm not saying that he's going to go deep into tournaments, but, you know, maybe we're underestimating his ability on clay, because he certainly, you know, he's only won the French once, and he has won some of the other titles, but he's won Monte Carlo before. But it's just one of those things where maybe he wants to see where he's at, and in some ways, not outwardly saying it, but he wants to show people that, hey, you know what, I can play on the clay if I want to. I've just chosen not to the last few years.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, I think more so his clay results will really be judged by how his grass results are. So I think if he does really good at the grass, like, oh, it was a great idea. But if he doesn't, then he's going to get scrutinized for that decision. So another obviously very comparable figure to Federer, however, on the women's side, is Serena Williams. And she's had some difficulties in recent months with her results and injuries. And you said she's coming back for what, Madrid or Rome? What's her next event?
She's going to play Rome, I think, is going to be the next one.
Yeah, so Rome, and then probably Rome, French, and then Wimbledon. Those are next three coming up. So it's interesting. I mean, again, another player that doesn't have anything to prove as an overall, but you know that she wants to get to 24, 25 slams. That's without question, because that's kind of one of those figures where you look at that and you're like, okay, well, so who's really going to beat that? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nobody. I don't think Muguruza is going to win 20 Grand Slams. I don't think, you know, there's nobody else that I can see at this stage. Maybe, I mean, Osaka's got a couple. It's just so hard for a player to get to that level. You're talking about 20 years of dominance, right? That, for me, it's going to be interesting to see how she bounces back. The motivation, I think, is clearly there. Is the body there? That's, you know, suspect at the moment. But definitely the desire, and I think the effort is present with Serena. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I think Serena has proven over the years, obviously, that she's talented on all surfaces. She can play all surfaces. She's a good clay court player. She's a good grass court player. Excellent hard court player. So she has the ability, which is a nice ability, to be able to come back and play tournaments and play on surfaces with very little match presence. Excuse me. She's able to come into an event and just walk onto the court. And we've seen it before where she hasn't played any tune-ups leading up to Wimbledon. She hasn't played any grass court tournaments. She'll go out and she'll play Wimbledon. She'll win Wimbledon. She can do the same on clay. She can do the same on hard court. She has that ability. She's that good. I think, though, that the difference between, say, now and maybe 3-4 years ago is that maybe that's going to be a lot harder to do than it was 3-4 years ago. Mm-hmm. She's older. She hasn't been playing as many matches. The women's field, the WTA Tour, is deeper and better than it ever has been, in my opinion. It's not as easy just to go out there and then, you know, rack up five wins in a row to get to a semifinal or quarterfinal and then get into a final, as it was. I mean, she's shown, obviously, coming back, getting to the Wimbledon final last year, U.S. Open final, she showed that she's still a great player, and I mean, she's on her game, a dominant force in the sport. But she's also shown that she's vulnerable. She's also shown that she's had some injuries, and her body's older. It's not even, forget about the fact that she's a mother. It's the fact that she's older now, and she's been hurt quite a bit. And I think it's a lot harder for her to come back and do what she used to do 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago than it is now. And that's not just because she's out of shape or anything. I still think that she's gotten back to being in very good shape. I think it just has to do with the fact that it's just not as easy to be able to do that anymore. She's just older and the tour is stronger. And I think it's a mistake going into the big events and the slams without playing matches. And so now you're asking Serena to, who hasn't played since Miami, isn't playing any tune-ups on clay until Rome, then is going to play Rome, and we don't even know 100% if she plays Rome, but then she's going to play the French, and then we assume that she's not playing any grass court lead-ups, and she's going to walk in and then suddenly win Wimbledon. I just don't see it. Like, I just don't. This isn't to take away from her legacy, isn't to take away from the way that she's playing or that she can play, but I just think that it's foolish to think that Serena can do what she did 5, 6 years ago, which is what she used to do. That was her schedule. She would play the slams, and she wouldn't play a lot of tune-ups, and then she was having success, so why would you change what's working for you? I think now it's harder than ever to go through draws, especially when you're not the number one seed anymore, too. That's another thing. She's not the number one seed, but she was in a lot of these slams, too. Even when she wasn't playing tune-ups, she would still be the number one seed because of her ranking points and so forth. It's going to be harder and harder for her to do what she used to do because of the fact that the women's game is so strong. I mean, there's probably, off the top of my head, 5, 6, 7, 8 players who I would consider could win the French Open this year other than Serena. Mm-hmm. And in the past, you know, maybe you could count that maybe one, two, or three players. I think now that the draws are so deep, there's so many good players. I mean, we've seen the WTA this year, 18 winners, 18 tournaments. It's not just Kvitova, Svitolina, you know, Serena, Halep winning everything. It's a whole bunch of other players. It's deep, and it's going to be, Serena's going to face some of these players who won tournaments this year in early rounds, and she's going to have to get past those, and that's not going to be easy to do. So I think it's going to be a bigger challenge for her than some people suspect.
Okay. And I think it's definitely, I mean, there's been 18 events and 18 different winners this year. So that just, that's a testament to what you're saying. Actually, I had in our previous show from Miami, we had picked the winners, and I had Ash Barty winning the tournament before the tournament even took. Yeah. So I got that one right, which was good.
She got to the final of, I think it was Sydney. She lost to Kvitova in that final. I was doing that tournament too. I didn't do the final, but
yeah.
I think it was Kvitova, Barty in the final. Barty's a great player. Like, I really like Barty. I think she's a future Grand Slam winner. She's got a great all round game. Very confident player. Hits the ball a ton, and I think I see big things for her. There's no doubt about it.
So now, as we get closer to the draw preview, last topic we're going to talk about is Naomi Osaka, still number one in the world, hasn't had a great year after Australia, and we obviously, you know, judge these players by the highest grade. You know, she just signed a big deal with Nike, so she's left Adidas, now she's with Nike Court. From, you know, sources that are pretty close to the company that I know very well, they told me that, you know, they were looking at signing her when she was around 17, but she was hitting a really big ball but wasn't landing anything, and now obviously she's, you know a couple Grand Slams in a row, number one in the world, she's, you know, she's killing it. Very, you know, marketable player, has the Japanese feel with the Asian market as well too, which is huge. So I think that's going to be a big thing for her. And it's interesting because, you know, and then you got the Olympics coming up next year. That was, I think, definitely a big thing for them because it's going to be in Japan. So she's gonna be plastered all over the place. So that's that to me was a thing. But it's interesting to see, you know, a big company like Nike, which is the biggest, you know, sporting company in the world, especially for like apparel and soft goods. You know, Fed is out, so they have a lot of cap there. They're really killing. I mean, women's side, they have what, like 7 or 8 top 11 players. They have everybody basically. Yeah. So
last year they picked up Simona Halep right when she was
Halep, Sloane Stephens.
Started the year with no sponsor at all, so they picked her up too.
And they got Sloane Stephens right after she won the U.S. Open. I mean, so they got, apart from maybe Muguruza, who has a pretty comprehensive Adidas deal, they got, I think, everybody else that's noteworthy. And that's
Spitalina's another one that they have for sure. I know that she's been with them. She's been with them for quite some time.
Yeah.
Obviously they've got Serena too.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of the top Kvitova's with them. Pliskova is not, I don't believe.
No, she's with Fila. Yeah.
Kerber is not. But yeah, they certainly have I think Sabalenka is as well.
Yes.
So they certainly have. I know Wozniacki's Adidas too. I think so. Yeah. That's sort of like their top 12. But yeah, they certainly have. Gone big on the women's game, and you know, the Nike apparel is always attracts attention from everybody, especially every Grand Slam. There's always the new look, and how crazy are they going to go? Is it going to be a neon color? Or what are they going to go with?
Well,
Shapovalov today was wearing orange, which is what Nadal had been wearing in the past for parts of the year. So I don't know if the orange look is the clay court look that they're going with or not. But,
Well, it's gonna be interesting because I saw what they're gonna wear for the French, and they're going with like a life and death type of feel. So it's gonna be like angels and skulls and stuff like that. So it's gonna be really interesting. Watch out for that one. But in terms of, well, you also didn't mention two other women that are coming up: Bianca Andreescu, who's with Nike, and then Amanda Anisimova. And how do you say her last name? Anyways, she just won a tournament yesterday as well too, right? And I mean, those two for me are massive up and comers, and
they're young players. With Bianca, she's just 18, and Anisimova is 17. So I mean, they're definitely, look, the women's game. Like I mean, I cover the WTA, I do their broadcasts. I'm a little biased, but the women's game right now, to me, is the best it's been in years. It's
absolutely
it's continually gotten better over the last 2-3 years as well.
Yes.
But it's not just the big stars now; it's the younger players too that you're starting to hear about, the Yastremskas of the world too. You know, Anisimova, Andreescu. There's a ton of good young players who are coming up through the system. 17, 18, 19 year olds. Osaka is just the top of the sport, and she's the youngest, and Sabalenka's right there. There's a ton of good players, and it just shows where the balance of the women's game is right now. And I think it's exciting. I think it's good for the sport, because women's tennis has always been kind of, you know, known as a sport that is known worldwide, but maybe doesn't bring in the numbers that the men's game does. I know there's been some controversy about that over the years, and the equal prize money debate and that sort of thing. But you know what? If you go and watch women's tennis at any event, whether it's in Toronto at the Ryder Cup or any of the other events, it's exciting stuff. There's been some good matches. I mean, I just got back from doing matches from Lugano, Switzerland. And, you know, the first 3 matches I did were all over 2 hours. They were all 3 sets. And there was some exciting stuff there. A few unforced errors here and there, but the matches were competitive. They were good and exciting to watch. So I think the women's game is in a really good place right now. And I think that, you know, if you have an opportunity to get to the Rogers Cup in Toronto this year, this is going to be one of the better years, you know, for the women's competition in Toronto, just because of how deep the field is. I think you're going to see some really good, really good numbers and really good crowds out there, because I think people are going to, obviously Andreescu is going to be the star player. Everyone's going to want to see her. But I think, you know, if you go during the day, you might get the opportunity to see some of these really good young talented players who are going to be the next Naomi Osakas or are on the cusp of being right there. So I think the game is in a great spot, and Nike's obviously decided to jump on board and is recognizing the talents themselves.
For sure. All right, John. So as we move now into the Monte Carlo draw, it took actually started yesterday. So yesterday's in the books. Today's in the books as well too, because we're obviously in Eastern Standard Time. They're about 6 hours ahead of us. So play.
I'm trying to figure out, Neymar, why do they always start these tournaments overseas on Sundays now instead of Mondays? The French Open does the same. I don't understand it. I don't know why they do it.
Well, they do. It's very.
Everybody off. Yeah. Confused.
No. That in that capacity, you're correct. But from a TV perspective, I think it's not good. But in terms of viewership, because you're getting people on their days off, right, which is the weekend, and so they're able to go. Like the French is banking on that extra Sunday, so they get three Sundays, and Monte Carlo is doing the same thing, and I think Madrid and Rome do the same thing as well too. So that's pretty much it. It's ticket sales for the venue that they want to sell out the place. They want to get as many people in there as possible. That being said, because I mean Monaco is so close to France and Nice and everything, I think you're going to get people there anyway. It's a big tournament, so I don't know.
I think the big thing that concerns me though is that when you start having tournaments that start on Sundays instead of finishing on Sundays, is that finish on Sundays, but if you have back-to-back tournaments, you're going to lose players because, you know, it's hard enough. Like, I'll just give an example: the Indian Wells Miami back-to-back. As much as I like the back-to-back tournaments, it doesn't work. And the reason I say it doesn't work is because you're asking players to go deep in one tournament, playing at a different, you know, level, a different climate, and then you're asking people to fly all the way across the country and then go from, you know, the desert heat to, you know, humidity of Miami, which is hotter than anything, crazy temperatures there. And then you're asking those same people, some who've gone deep into the tournament at Indian Wells, to then fly across the country and then, you know, start off in playing in Miami and then go through that run at a quick pace. I mean, you saw Andreescu's turnaround. She goes to the final of Indian Wells, and then they're getting her to play a first round match on Tuesday at Miami. I mean, she didn't end up playing until Thursday because of the rain delay and everything. But I just think that you're asking too much when you start asking, you know, players to start tournaments on Sundays and then even end tournaments on Sundays and turning them around on quick notice. It's not an easy. I know, Fred, like, you know, all these clay court events like Barcelona, Rome, Monte Carlo, they're all in relative proximity. It's not that far apart from each other. But it's not even the travel. It's more so just the toll on the body. And you know how the toll on the body on clay is pretty intense. I just think that, you know, yeah, you want numbers and stuff, but start the tournaments on Monday. So that way, if players are playing the week before, in this case, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think Songa's played in the final of the tournament this weekend. Can you just play the semifinals in Morocco, I think it was. So now you're asking him to play the semifinals in Morocco on Saturday, and then he's going to play a first round match in Monte Carlo on Tuesday. I mean, it's a lot for players to do, especially him coming off an injury. You know, I know his first round match. I think he's playing like Taylor Fritz.
If he
loses that match, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it's a lot to ask for players. You know, and to move tournaments to starting on Sundays, I just don't like it. Especially if tournaments start on Sundays, and then let's say Federer and Nadal are playing in finals on Sundays. If the next tournament starts on a Sunday, then you're asking those players to start playing their first round matches on Tuesdays, and I think that's just too much. I don't like it.
Yeah. No. I think there's something to be said about that for sure. So when we're looking at the draw now, we got Djokovic back. He's going to play a guy who just beat him, actually, in Miami, in Philip Kohlschreiber. He's got him first off. Kohlschreiber took out Taro Daniel today, easily. Other players in Djokovic's section, as you mentioned, are Songa, Fritz. I don't think he's going to have to worry about too much of those guys. But then you got, the up-and-coming Greek player, Tsitsipas, who's had a great year. He plays very well on clay. You know, he's got the home base at the Mortoglu Academy, which is very nearby, less 40-minute drive. So he's going to be in good form. And for me, John, I'm actually going to be going with Tsitsipas to come out of this little quarter here and make the semifinals. Yeah, I think he's playing well. And it's nothing against Djokovic. I mean, in our previous podcast, I was talking about Novak. I still think he's going to win slams. I just think that he's kind of like got the Golden State Warriors mentality, where he's like, you know, this is regular season. I'm looking forward to the playoffs. This guy's won every Masters 1000. He's won this, and he's not like Federer is a different entity, right? Like, he really loves tennis. Like, he just loves being there. He likes the, you know, the attention, and he likes the media, and he'll do his 4 or 5 different press conferences in different languages and sign autographs for 2 hours. Like, this, like, it's amazing. And not that Djokovic is not great with that stuff, because he is, but I think that his focus now more than anything is to win majors. And he's turning 32, and I think next month, who knows how much longer he's going to play. Obviously, he can keep going if he wants, realistically, because he's still in great shape. But, you know, to win like another 5-6 majors, you know, that's another 2-3 years of hardcore tennis. So I think that that's kind of what he's setting himself for. He knows that the French is not his best slam. You know, the year that he clipped Nadal too, you know, Rafa was probably in the worst form that he's been in a long time. He had no confidence. I think he came in winning just Madrid, and then even in that tournament, Nishikori pulled out in the finals. So it wasn't like there was anything major going on with his form. And then Djokovic beat him in the, what was it, in the quarters. And then I think he beat Murray in the finals. Or maybe that was the, I'm not sure what year that was. But anyways, the year that he ended up winning was, I mean, you know, Rafa was not in his best level. I think a lot of people would agree on that. I think this year he probably will be. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think it's an ability issue for this event with Novak. I just don't know. I think he's kind of saving himself a little bit, for lack of a better analogy. So I think for me, that's why, you know, Tsitsipas is one of those guys. For him to win Marseille earlier this year, you're talking about this travel, go to Dubai the next week and make the finals, grind out a lot of matches and lose to Federer 4-4, to me it was very indicative of how mentally strong he is at this age and how much he can just...
The only thing I'd say about Tsitsipas, though, is that I saw him play a couple of matches in Miami, and one of those was against Shapovalov, where he ended up losing in the fourth round to him at like 1:30 in the morning. I didn't think I've seen Tsitsipas play quite a bit. I saw him at the Rogers Cup last year. Saw him at the Next Gen Finals in Milan. Saw him this year in Miami. He's obviously a talented player. He's got a great game. Hits the ball super hard. He had a bit of a lull in Indian Wells. Lost to Felix. I didn't think he played well in that match. He lost to Shapovalov. He's 0-2 if you're counting at home on matches against Canadians. But his other two matches, he in Miami, he won at both of them in straight sets. I think he got to the doubles final in Miami, if I stand corrected, but I think he did.
Yes.
He's a good player. He's obviously got a lot of talent. He's sort of become, you know, I think. I won't say the darling of men's tennis, but I think he's very much a well-liked player from a fan's perspective. But I don't know. I'm maybe not as high on Tsitsipas as you are right now. I think that to me, Djokovic is still, he's had a bit of a lull as well. And I mean, you're probably right. There's probably a little bit in him, and I think it'd be unnatural, you know, for him not to be. You know, lose the motivation at times and sort of not be as into it as possible. But you remember, you know, Djokovic has a place in Monte Carlo. This tournament means a lot to him. I know he's mentioned that he wants to win this tournament. It's one of his favorite tournaments to play. He's one win away from 200 on clay. I think that, Cole Schreiber, he's playing Cole Schreiber, as you mentioned. I think he'll want some revenge in that match. And, it would be a good match against Tsitsipas. I'm not saying that either player is guaranteed to win it, but I'd still give the edge to Djokovic at this point. And, we were talking about, whether who's going to come out of that. If I was put on the spot, I'd say Djokovic will beat Tsitsipas, and I would see Djokovic and team in one half in the semis on one side. And I would put Nadal. There's no reason to think that he's suddenly, even though he's been a bit hurt and he's coming back, that the clay's always been generous to him. I don't really see much in his portion of the draw that would say that he's not going to reach the final. I think Korch is probably Borna Korch is probably the player that's the most dangerous to me. Fanini's hasn't had a very good year. Got out of the first round, but barely. Zverev hasn't played that great lately. Cilic is never a player that I get really too concerned about. So there's not really a lot on that half. So I mean, I think a Djokovic team, you know, Borna Coric, Rafael Nadal semi, those would be the semis, and there's no reason to think it wouldn't be a Nadal-Djokovic final, which I think everybody in Monte Carlo would be quite happy with, to be honest.
Yeah. No, so for me, that's very similar. I got Tsitsipas team, Coric, and Nadal, and then I have Nadal defeating Tsitsipas in the finals to win, I don't know, his 20th Monte Carlo title, whatever it is at this stage. It's become ridiculous. But wanted to, couple things here. So every year these clay court seasons roll around, and on the men's side, we're like, okay, well, you know, Nadal's got this locked up, and pretty much like 90% of the years this happened. Right? So it's no reason to really think that it's going to be that off this year. But when we're looking at some potential competition for Nadal, obviously, Joker is there without a shadow of a doubt. Remains to be seen what Federer can do on the surface, just because he hasn't really played on it 2 or 3 years. Stan is a former French Open winner. He's still getting his footing back, but he's definitely playing much better. And then we got our Canadian boy, Felix Auger-Aliassime, who's playing really well, plays his first round tomorrow against Londero, who I believe made the finals of a smaller event earlier this year during the South American swing, winner of that to play Zverev. And how much can we expect? Because that's the thing, right? Like, Felix, I think I put up a tweet earlier this week. He's got less than 500 points to defend for the rest of the season, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's going to get into all these big events now. He's 33 in the world. It's all gravy.
Yeah.
And he's still got, you know, 7 Masters 1000s and 3 Grand Slams. So there's a big potential for him to, I think, worst case scenario, end up somewhere 20 to 25. And if he can crush it in one of these events again, then he's going to be a top 20 player by year's end. But so do you see him putting together any sort of a run that he can do some damage here against maybe a Zverev or a Coric? Because now he loves clay. This is his favorite surface.
Yes.
So.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you know, with Felix, really anything could happen. A lot of the players that he's going to face have never played on the other side of the court, the net from him. So when he plays Zverev, it's going to be the first time that they've ever played a match. You know, when he plays any of these guys, I mean, most players haven't seen Felix. They may have seen him, but they haven't played against him.
No.
You saw a little bit of that in Miami with Coric. I remember after Coric won his match right before he played Felix, he said, you know, he was asked, you know, what do you know about him? And he said, absolutely nothing. I have to go and review the tape. Like, I don't know anything about him. And you're going to see that. And that's a huge advantage for Felix, being able to, you know, maybe play some of these top players who I've never seen him before. I'm pretty sure when he beat Fanini in South America earlier this year, I'm sure Fanini had no idea who he was. He goes out there and beats Fanini in straight sets. You know, it's very similar, and I'm not comparing anything, but you know, I'm sure Nadal knew very little about Shapovalov when they played at the Rogers Cup a couple of years ago. That is an advantage for the player who's playing the better player, I think. Knowing everybody knows Nadal's game. I'm sure Shapovalov knew Nadal's game, but not all the top players know the lesser known players. And obviously, Felix is a player that's been highly touted for a period of time now. There's been a lot of attention on him. People are starting to recognize the name. But a lot of players have never seen him play, have never been on the other side of the court. Tsitsipas is somebody who has played him like 4 times in juniors, lost every single match, 3 or 4 times, lost every match to him. He'd seen him before, so he knew what was coming. But I think, you know, with the fact that he's going to get into some of these tournaments, and he is locked into Barcelona, he's playing Madrid, he's playing Rome, he's playing Monte Carlo this week, he's going to play the French. For sure, there's no reason to think that he can't, you know, shock some people and, you know, get into a tournament deep or two. I think the same with Shapovalov when he first came out. You know, people are like, who is this guy? He's a left-handed player. He's kind of hitting the ball all over the place. He hits it hard, hits it kind of wild, and caught a lot of people off guard. But some of the players have come around to play Shapovalov a second or third time now and have sort of started figuring out. So Struff is an example. He lost to him in Tokyo earlier this year. Shapovalov wins a tight 7-5 first set, and then Struff figures some things out and wins 9 or 10 of the last 11 games, and pretty much, you know, beats him around the court 3-1 in the final two sets. So that first matchup when you play a player for the first time is definitely difficult for some players. Some of the best players in the world will figure it out anyway. But I think there's an opportunity here for Felix to, you know, win this first round match, possibly catch Zverev at a moment where he's not playing well. Zverev has been very poor this year.
Mm-hmm.
Not been in any groove, but manages still to be the number three player in the world, but has had some poor results, including one last week on clay in Morocco. So there's no reason to think that he hasn't got a shot in that match. We'll see what Zverev brings to the table. He could get Fanini again in the next round. He's beaten Fanini already on clay this year. He's got Nishikori maybe after if he can get through that, or Chorich will be looking for some revenge from Miami. So yeah, I mean, I think there's, to answer your question, I think there's no doubt that he could surprise some people and he could do something and you know, possibly get into a semi or a quarterfinal and possibly get deep into the French. Who knows? But you're right. It's very similar to what Dennis had last year. He didn't play a lot of tournaments in his first full year, and he got a lot of free points from even losing early on. He didn't have to defend, so it makes a big difference, and that's a good advantage for Felix here, is not having to defend any points at this point. It's only going to be until next year when he goes into the South American swing, rather, where he's going to have to defend again.
For sure. Okay, so what's your take on this event? If you're going to have a Djokovic in the Nadal final, who do you have winning that match?
Well, I mean, look, the Nadal record on clay is just crazy. I was looking at some numbers before we came on here, and between Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Rome, Madrid, and the French Open, the five big clay court tournaments, Nadal's record is 317-26. So that's a 92% win ratio, 46 titles combined in those five events. He's won Monte Carlo 11 times. I think putting all those numbers together, I'd be foolish not to go with Nadal. The only thing I would say is that maybe it goes three sets, only because Nadal has not played a lot lately and he's returning on the clay. So maybe just to make it a little bit more interesting, you know, we'll say that it's a three-set win over Djokovic.
Okay. I'm going to go with, if it's with what I'm predicting, Rafa versus Stefano Tsitsipas. I'm going Nadal straight sets. Another beatdown city. Maybe something like a 4-3, 4-2 finals.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, anyways, so John, thank you very much for joining us this week. Can you tell everybody out there how they can you know, check you out coming up?
Yeah, I'm my Twitter handle at SportsHorn, Sports HORN, same as Instagram as well. I'll be heading over to cover the WTA events in Rome and Madrid starting at the beginning of May, and then that'll wind up the clay court season, and then we'll be at the first week of the French Open doing the world feed there, so that'll be fun. Looking forward to checking out Roland Garros for the first time. I've never been there, so that'll be cool to see, and then the next thing you know, it'll be the grass season and Wimbledon will be upon us, so yeah, it's funny how the year seems so long, but the time goes so quickly. And
yeah.
So far, it's been a pretty entertaining tennis season on both the men's and the women's side. We've seen, as we mentioned, 18 of different winners on 18 different tournaments. On the women's side, we've seen some surprises. We've seen some new names, the emergence of Bianca Andreescu. And on the men's side, we've seen some good tennis, too. And I'm looking forward to seeing how the rest of this year plays out. I think there's some interesting times ahead. There'll be some things that'll be predictable and things that are unpredictable, but that's what makes the sport so good, is that you just never know from week to week what's going to happen.
Perfect. So again, everybody out there, make sure to check this podcast out on iTunes as well as our website, tennisconnected.com, and Android can also be downloaded there. We'll be back next week to wrap up Monte Carlo and look forward to some of the future events, for instance, in Madrid and Rome. In the meantime, thanks again for listening. Be good. Enjoy all the action in Monte Carlo.